During the summer after my first year of seminary, I stayed in Cambridge to do a unit of CPE. That's Clinical Pastoral Education, a requirement for many seminarians. 10 weeks of full-time chaplaincy work combined with some intentional reflective practice that was designed to make me a better pastor. Some of you whom I have visited in the hospital can attest that my supervisor was more interested in me doing the chaplaincy work than the reflective practice that was supposed to improve my bedside manner. He didn't have time, really, to sit down with me all that much. He'd rather let me get on with it as if I were another member of his staff visiting the thousands of people that came in and out of a really big hospital. Since I was treated like a full-time member of that staff, one of my responsibilities was to lead worship on Sunday morning when it was my turn in the hospital chapel. Early in the morning, there was a Roman Catholic Mass that a local Catholic priest came to say, but later in the morning, the bigger service was a Protestant service that included communion. Two of the other colleagues in the chaplaincy were Anglican priests, but my supervisor was a nonconformist of one kind or another. I can't really remember whether he was Baptist or Presbyterian. In England, those lines blur together more so than they do in a place like Decatur. But whatever the case, when I looked at Derek, my supervisor, and told him that I couldn't do the communion part of the service, he looked at me and said, "Why not?" "Well," I said, "because, you know, I'm not ordained. I'm not allowed to, you know, I'm just a seminarian." And he smiled and said, "You think it makes any difference whether a bishop has put his hands on your head and said some special words over you? You think that gives somebody a magic touch that I don't have?" He had a good point. He'd never been ordained by a bishop in apostolic succession. It didn't matter to him and to the congregation. It didn't matter whether he was the one saying the words. If he had to come all the way up there on Sunday morning just to say the bit that Jesus had said, would anybody in the congregation, even the Anglicans, be able to tell a difference if it were a seminarian who likewise hadn't been ordained saying those words? He had a good point. But so did I. If I did it, my bishop would kill me, or at the very least, throw me out of the ordination process. Some rules are made to be broken, but some rules aren't. Or are they? Today's gospel lesson is all about religious rules that seem made to be broken. It's two episodes tied together by one theme. In the first, we find Jesus and the disciples walking through a grain field on a Sabbath, and as they go, the disciples begin to pluck off heads of grain to eat them. If it's hard for you to imagine walking through a field and pulling off the tops of stalks of winter wheat to eat that, it doesn't make a lot of sense to me either. Imagine instead walking down an alleyway and seeing a beautiful blackberry bush on a summer afternoon with those beautiful ripe fruit just waiting to be picked. The picking and the eating wasn't the problem. Deuteronomy 23 makes it clear that if you're walking through a neighbor's field, you're allowed to pluck some of the grain to eat it, as long as you use your hands and not a sickle or another tool. But what wasn't allowed, as we all know, is to pluck that grain on the Sabbath. For in 6 days, the Bible tells us, the Lord made heaven and earth, the sea and all that is in them, and rested on the seventh day. Therefore, the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and made it holy. All Jewish people, including Jesus and his disciples, were supposed to refrain from doing any work on the seventh day, the Sabbath, and that included harvesting grain, even a little bit of grain. The disciples were breaking the law, and the Pharisees who saw them breaking the law had a good point. Why was their rabbi, their religious leader, allowing his followers to flaunt a sacred law of the Hebrew Scriptures as if it were no big deal. In the first episode, the Pharisees interrogate Jesus about something his disciples had done. But in the second, it's Jesus' actions that come to center stage. In a synagogue was a man with a withered hand, dried up, shriveled. And because it was the Sabbath, they were watching to see whether Jesus would heal him. Now, if the man's life was in danger, Jesus, anybody, would be duty-bound to help the man. That's clear in the law. But a withered hand isn't the sort of illness or impairment that might lead to death. It's the kind of thing that could wait until sunset when the Sabbath was over. But that gave Jesus the perfect opportunity to push the boundaries. This time Jesus goes on the offensive and he asks all those around him, is it lawful on the Sabbath to do good or evil, to save or to kill? And no one said anything. Their silence speaking volumes, not only about their hardness of heart, but about the complexity of the question that Jesus had given them. Is it lawful? It's hard to tell. The law makes it pretty clear that that kind of healing isn't allowed on the Sabbath, but even those of us who didn't inhabit that moment can feel some tension between right and right, two goods hard to choose between on this occasion. So Jesus, who wasn't interested in playing by anybody else's rules, was he, told the man to stretch out his hand, and by stretching it out, it was healed. And immediately those religious leaders went out and found their political counterparts and began to conspire as to how they were going to catch him and kill him. But what is this passage really about? The fact that Mark makes the miracle an afterthought, hardly anything at all happens when the hand is healed, leads me to believe that Mark had Sabbath in mind. But why does that matter? Why does the Sabbath matter to us? When was the last time you cared about observing the Sabbath? I'll tell you the last time I cared. I was 10 years old, and I tried to convince my father that it was against God's law for me to cut the grass on a Saturday. It didn't work, right? We don't observe the Sabbath. We don't think of the fourth commandment like that. So far down on our list of observances that most Christians forget that the Sabbath isn't Sunday, the first day of the week when we celebrate Jesus' resurrection, but Saturday, the last day of the week when we celebrate football and yard work, maybe a baseball practice or two. Why is it that we push that aside so quickly? Well, partly it's because of what Jesus said. We know, even if we weren't paying attention in Sunday school, the difference between the good guy and the bad guys in the story. We know if Jesus says it, it must be good enough for us. And Jesus says Sabbath was made for humankind, not humankind for the Sabbath. And if Jesus says it, that's good enough for me. But what I don't think we realize, what I think we don't realize, is that even though what Jesus says is good enough for us, it wasn't good enough for them. They couldn't take him at his word. This is a big deal. This is hugely controversial. Keeping the Sabbath is fundamental to what it means to be a faithful Jewish person. When the unholy Roman Empire came in and tried its best to force Jewish people to become secular members of the empire, keeping the Sabbath was one of those few ways that Jews were able to maintain their integrity. It was as important as circumcision or keeping kosher. This is how God's people remained faithful to God instead of the emperor. In fact, just a few decades earlier, when Antiochus IV, the Seleucid emperor, was ruling Judea with an iron fist, he began to persecute God's people, killing them by the scores. And the rabbis at that time said it would be better on the Sabbath to be slaughtered alongside one's family than to defend one's life. Now, things had relaxed a little bit by the time Jesus was born. But when this rabbi comes to town and tosses away that Sabbath observance as if it weren't even as important as his disciples' grumbling stomachs, he might as well have been spitting on the graves of those martyrs. How do you think that went down? What would it be like if Jesus came to town and started preaching about something that our grandparents would have been willing to die for, and to say that it just doesn't matter anymore? This is a hard passage. It's a big passage. It's more important than just how we treat the seventh day of the week. It's deeper than that, and it's hard to get our hearts and minds around something of this magnitude. Jesus seems to be saying to us that no rule, no law, no tradition, no matter how important it is to us, it cannot stand if it gets in between God's love and a human being, that no one can be denied wholeness. No one can be refused reconciliation to God if some human rule is standing in the way. Now, on the surface, that makes sense, right? We know that God is love, and if it's not of love, then it's not of God. That's not so hard to accept as long as we are the ones who get to decide when and how and for whom the rules are broken. But what happens when it's somebody who doesn't look like us or sound like us, some radical prophet or crazy preacher or dodgy liberal who is telling us we've got to put our traditions aside because of the latest social concern? You like that? I like that? I don't think so. But that's what Jesus is saying. That's what Jesus is giving us. But behind that is a transcendent truth that I think we can all hold on to. All week long, I've tried to imagine in my mind what religious rule it would be that Jesus could cast aside that would awaken within me, within us, that same kind of reaction. And I can't even imagine one, because it's impossible for me to conceive of something so precious being taken away. Yet behind that loss that I'm scared of feeling is a love I'm desperate to hold on to. A love that says nothing gets between you and me and God. The Sabbath observance at its best was about reminding God's people that they belong to their loving Creator, a Creator who remains active in their lives. But like all religious rules, once human beings get a hold of it, we twist it into something that becomes an obstacle to the very thing it was intended to convey. What are the other precepts, the other rules, the other rubrics, the other traditions that we've twisted into obstacles that stand in the way of God's love? Jesus says, whatever it is, it's time to sweep it aside. It's time to give it up, because nothing can stand in the way of God's love. God's salvation can't be restricted by human precepts. Human precepts must always be subject to God's law. So what is it? What is it that we're holding on to that's getting in the way? I can't think of it. Maybe it's because we've got it all sorted out. Maybe it's because there's nothing left standing in between God's people and God's love. Then again, maybe not.